Smashville, good morning, and thank you for joining us. It is indeed Morning Drive here on this Friday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Great to have you in. Nick Braden, D. Mace will be back next week. Chase McCabe on this Friday, a day in which we talk about what happened last night, both on the ice and on the hardwood, and it was pretty much upset city across the board, but we begin with the Preds. As all good things, Braden, must come to an end.
Yeah, and I think if you want a blueprint about how, if you're a team in the Western Conference, I'm assuming you were watching last night, because if you want a blueprint as to how to beat the Nashville Predators, Toronto has given it to you, not just on one occasion either. They've been very good against Nashville both last year and this year. I know Nashville saved a point and got a couple of points in a win earlier in the season, but that was a tough game. Lost at home late in the season last year at Bridgestone to Toronto, lost again this year late in the season. And I think you heard it there from Ryan Ellis in the update that they deserved everything that they got last night, because they just got flat-out punched in the face right out of the gate and didn't really respond. Now, they played pretty close for a little while, but when Austin Matthews does something that only Austin Matthews can do, which is that the second goal is just ridiculous by him, but it's still a defensive breakdown in your own zone. And then you have another puck bounce out to Nylander who scores, and all of a sudden you're down 3-1. They didn't respond. And that is how you beat this Nashville Predators team. They're not the biggest team. They're not the most physical team in the NHL. They got some smaller guys, Fiala, Arvidsson, Ellis, whatever. That's how you beat them, fast, big, physical play. And you can bet that every other team in the NHL took note. Not that they don't already know all this stuff, but that's what I took away from last night, was if you want to beat Nashville, you got to come right at them. You got to come at them hard, and you got to hit them hard, and you got to just keep hitting them and see if their will hold up. And last night it didn't. So,
if you're looking at the way you can win in the NHL, I would rather be a little smaller and skilled than be a big physical brute team, because I feel like nowadays, by and large across the board, it's a different league compared to 10, 15 years ago, where open ice skill is what's going to prevail more often than not. It's kind of like in the NFL where you got to be able to throw the ball. It's not ground and pound anymore.
I totally agree. The problem is that Winnipeg, Pittsburgh, Tampa Bay, Toronto, they are big and physical, and they are skilled.
True,
that's the problem, is you got, you know, that's what's scary about Winnipeg's top six. They are big and fast and physical. That's why I thought Edmonton was going to be so good this year, is because you look at their first two lines, they're all 6'3". I mean, they're just huge. And they're just as fast and skilled as Nashville is, but they're bigger. So, listen, Nashville's got some physical pieces. Mike Fisher, Scott Hartnell, Subban, Ekholm. I mean, they got some physical guys, but Austin Watson obviously comes to mind. There's no question they've got some big physical guys to them, and they can play a heavy series if they need to. But the point is the way you have to attack Nashville is to just come at them as hard as you can right out of the gate, punch them. I mean, I don't mean physically punch them in the mouth. I mean, like, you know, like an NFL team when they run the football down your throat, or an Alabama team that comes out and hits you in the mouth. Just be physical with them. Keep hitting them early in the game. You got to be all energy. And if you can sustain that for 60 minutes and then maybe a 7-game series, you can beat Nashville. But Nash, it's then on Nashville to then respond. And they didn't last night. They do many nights. Many nights they respond. Last night they did not.
Well, and I'll say this too, Braden. I think that Toronto hit them with the speed game as well. I mean, that was the general consensus I got from the guys in the locker room after the game, is they were just really, really fast. And that's something that you would think would match up well with the Preds, because they have the speed game as well. But last night they just didn't have an answer for it, and I don't, you know, you never want to see a loss, you never want to lose, but I also got the vibe that's kind of like, hey, Colton Sissons told me, you'll hear this later, you know, hey, we just lost a hockey game for the first time in a long time. I mean, like, in regulation.
That part I'm good with.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm actually like, all right, you want to lose a couple more, not ideally not this weekend.
Right.
With Minnesota,
you need to take care
Winnipeg.
Of these three.
But if you want to lose to a couple Eastern Conference teams and then turn it back on again with like three to go, I'm fine with that. I don't have a problem with that. But there's a game that comes to mind. The Islanders game a couple of weeks ago comes to mind, where the Islanders just flat out outskated them. Went up and down the ice the entire first period. They came at them hard. And when I say come out and, you know, go head up, go head on, go right at the Predators. I'm not necessarily talking about, you know, cross checking and being super extra physical and dirty like Anaheim is. I just mean
you can mean the speed game,
right? I mean aggressive. Just go at them as hard as you can. Forecheck. Bring speed, bring power, and the Islanders did that. The difference between the Islanders and a team like Toronto is the Islanders are one of the worst defensive teams in the entire league. So you could come back from a 2-0 deficit or a 3-0 deficit and not feel bad about it. When you go up against the best teams, Toronto's, Winnipeg's, anybody else from the Eastern Conference, Boston, especially teams you don't know, and there's not as much history there like there was last night, that's how you attack this team. And that's where they're – and they – again, the power play didn't work for them last night, so they're going to have to fix that. That's something everybody has talked about on this team for the last, you know, 2 weeks, even through this winning streak. And of course, to be fair, they haven't lost a game in regulation in over a month. So it's going to happen.
February 17th.
Yeah, it was going to happen sooner or later. So I think there's also something that struck me last night watching this game. Toronto is a really easy team. Like, it's a hard team to hate. There's no history there between Nashville and Toronto. They got the best uniforms in the entire sport.
Oh, their fans were all over the place leading
great
up to the game.
They were like that last year at Bridgestone, really good fans. And Austin Matthews is a U.S.-born star that U.S. hockey fans should be excited to watch. And it's just – I think it's – I like that a U.S.-born hockey player is doing things in Toronto. I think that's cool for U.S. hockey. So it's a hard team to hate. You know, if they were to beat them in the Cup Final, that changes everything. All of a sudden, there's a lot of history there, and it's easy for Predators fans to hate the Toronto Maple Leafs. But – They're a franchise that's sort of like the Browns, sort of like the Indians, in that they are a premier franchise, an original franchise that hasn't won anything in like 70 years, but like sold out, you know, 22,000-seat building every single night. You sort of feel bad for the fans. So, like, that's a team that's easy to root for if you're just a general hockey fan. They made it hard to root for them last night.
And, you know, it's funny.
They played too good last night.
You mentioned about, you know, Toronto not taking their foot off the gas, and that's how you have to beat the Preds for 60 straight minutes. It's kind of a good thing that the Preds actually lost this game, because they can't afford to take their foot off the gas either, because they have 10 games left, 8 of which are against current playoff teams with a combined win percentage of 61%, which is the second most difficult stretch down the final 10 games in the NHL. So they're not going to be able to rest on their laurels and say, all right, we're 72 down with 10 to go. We've got everything locked up. Well, maybe the Central is locked up, but they're going to have really good caliber teams for 80% of the remainder of the season, and they got to keep going.
And there's a couple games in there. I think the 3 of the last 4 are on the road in the Eastern Conference, at Tampa, at Florida, at Washington. And you could see if everything is clinched at that point, you've got the division clinched, you've got – you know, home ice clinch, you got the Western Conference clinch, you might actually have a President's Trophy at that point. In fact, that game against Tampa could be for the President's Trophy in theory, with 4 to go. Do you mind losing one of those or two, resting players because you've clinched everything? I mean, that'll be a tough decision for Lavi to make. You know, he wants to put Peck out there as much as possible to win as many games to make him a Vezina Trophy winner, but he also wants to rest him for the playoffs. That's a tough battle that he has to decide sort of with his coaching staff.
I don't know if it is a tough decision just based on the message that he's been delivering. They want home ice throughout.
Oh, no, I agree, but they're close to getting that. I mean, they're a couple games away from clinching the division and a couple games away from clinching home ice.
Right, I think in that they would want the President's Trophy as well, because, I mean, they want to be set for – the long haul. So I don't know. I'm with you. Like, I kind of look at it as you don't want to put your guys in a position to get hurt, especially against a good team like Tampa this late in the season. But at the same time, I know what this team wants. I think they want it all.
And as Floyd Reese would say, you got to have home field ice. Home field ice is a huge, huge advantage in the Stanley Cup playoffs. All right, let's get to the stupid poll question of the day.
Now, the stupid poll question of the day.
So last night, doing the honky-tonk hat trick at Rippey's, I noticed two social observations. And I think we can throw these both out here and decide as to what would be a good poll question, or we could come up with something completely different.
I've got an idea I'll throw out there after you.
You got
after
one?
After yours.
So there was I would say it was probably 5-1 Maple Leaf fans last night inside of Rippey's, for what that's worth. And I noticed two things. A ton of Toronto fans wearing their hat backwards. And I'm talking not just like 21-year-olds. I'm talking 35, 40-year-old guys, kind of guys in
– like me.
You and our, you know, our age range. So I'm wondering, is there an age limit or a cutoff for wearing your hat backwards in public? And the thing that really stood out to me was they were kind of wearing dressier clothes. Like, they weren't just wearing sweatpants and a hooded sweatshirt. It was nice jeans, a button-up shirt, and then a backwards hat with not a fitted hat, but like the strapped hat.
Oh, all the hats that I wear backwards are probably snapback.
Really?
Yeah. I actually ironically have on a fitted hat right now, but it's a stretch one. Almost all my hats are snapback, for sure. I hope there's not an age limit. I wear my hat backwards, but I do that entirely because Ken Griffey Jr. was my favorite player growing up as a kid. And so when I was playing Little League Baseball at 6 years old, 7 years old, 8 years old, 10 years old, 12 years old, all I wanted to do was be Ken Griffey Jr. So I've worn my hat backwards basically since I watched Ken Griffey Jr. debut for the Mariners in the
pretty good guy to idolize.
Late 80s, early 90s. Not a great guy, great baseball player.
Well, yeah, but he was also the only clean,
oh, my God.
Stud in that era.
I mean, that's one
he's
of
the true home run king. Probably.
That's one of the greatest players I've ever seen in my life, and still to this day, when he does, that's one of the most beautiful baseball swings I've ever seen.
So smooth.
So that's why I do it. It's just completely where it's come from. And now that hat styles have gone back to the snapback,
they have.
I don't really like wearing the snapbacks facing forward because they're so like big and bulky, and I'm very particular about how a hat sits on my head, so I'm all about the snapback, but I got to go backwards on the snapback. I wear it with if I go to a Preds game, I've got my Preds shirt that I wear, which is a button down and jeans, and I'll wear a hat. So they're not like I'm not dressy, but it's Nashville dressy, you know.
Okay.
Like Nashville dressy is a little grungy, a little rough around the edges.
And then the other question I had was, is it, because I saw this at Rippey's last night, is it a violation for a man to be drinking a light beer while his female friend is pounding a lager or hard liquor?
I mean, I personally, except for any of our wonderful sponsors, I personally, it doesn't matter what the other person's drinking, I don't particularly drink light beer. I'm more of a craft beer guy.
See, because I like light beer, and I've always gotten, like, people bust my chops for it, and I'm thinking, to me, alcohol is alcohol. It doesn't matter how you get there.
But there's no alcohol in, like...
Well, okay, yeah,
really light beer.
Well, you gotta consume more to get there, but
And I don't have room in my stomach at 35. Just give it to me intravenously at that point. I want the alcohol directly into my system. Listen, you do you, man. Like, whatever you want to do in this world, whatever beer you want to drink that gets you through this day, you do what you got to do, man. So
those are the two things I observed.
Give me an IPA. Me and Hal Gill will drink IPAs, and you guys can all drink your light beers.
I think we should go with the backwards hat.
Backwards hat.
Can I ask one more real quickly?
Yeah.
Are Tennessee fans rooting for Loyola Chicago now? Because I got a theory on what happened. There's the most bizarre. It happened to me last night. It's one of the most bizarre phenomenon, and it doesn't happen in any other sport, but I think in the NCAA tournament it does, where you're honored to lose to somebody.
All right, we'll get to that next. Plus, Chase was able to catch up with Colton Sissons for a one-on-one. You'll hear from him on the other side. It's Morning Drive just getting underway on this Friday. Great to have you in. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Morning Drive on this Friday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Josh Ward, WNML Knoxville, coming up at the bottom of the hour. Looking forward to that. Preds go down 5-2 last night. All good things come to an end. Can't win every single game. Probably a good thing that they got knocked off last night. You bounce back. Strong stretch coming up. 7 of your final 9 opponents are playoff caliber teams. So we'll see how they respond in the coming days and coming weeks. But right now, Chase McCabe with his one-on-one last night. In the dressing room, here is Colton Sissons.
Colton, I know that things didn't go the way you guys wanted tonight. It seemed like the first two periods, it was a little closer, and then things just got away from you in the third.
Yeah, obviously, with the score turning the way it did. Thought we were starting to play a little bit better in the second and the third, and a couple of bad bounces, but I can't just chalk it up to that. I thought they're just the better team tonight, and they're a fast squad. They're difficult to play against with all their speed, and they battle really hard as well, so it's a tough team to play.
I know losses like this obviously aren't what you want, but is there a takeaway? Is there some sort of silver lining learning lesson that you can take away from this?
Yeah, I mean, we just lost a hockey game. We've been winning so much, it feels pretty crappy when we do get a loss, but there's things that we'll watch in the video and learn from, and we just had an off night like every team does once in a while, and I don't think we'll see them again, but maybe sometime in the playoffs we'll get our revenge.
The message has been one game at a time. You stay in the moment with this team. I guess that goes both ways, even in a loss, right?
Yeah. You know, I mean, every team talks about not getting too high and too low and limit those kind of roller coaster rides that some teams seem to get on, and we've always done a pretty good job of that around here with our coaching staff and just the guys in here being accountable. So we'll learn from it. We'll get better, and we'll move on.
Colton, appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thanks.
Colton Sissons with Chase McCabe last night, and the takeaway from the game is kind of like the blueprint on how you beat this team and, you know, what the Predators' kryptonite might be, but I don't think it's really any cause for concern. You went undefeated for basically a month.
No, I think there's a couple things. One, I think this is going to be the lineup you're going to see more times than not. Last night, Kyle Yarncroke, Mika Salamaki, Anthony Boteto, and Yannick Weber out of the game as three scratches, and then, of course, Kyle Yarncroke out for the rest of the regular season. It feels like that's going to be their primary lineup. So I think that's one thing to note. But the other thing is, again, be fast, be aggressive, take the game to Nashville and see if they can handle the pressure of the constant forecheck and the physicality and the speed. But I think the number one thing is, yeah, that's the blueprint. Now how do you respond to that? All right, you didn't respond last night. Fine. That happens. It's a hockey season, whatever. The question is now, with three games in a row against the two teams that are directly behind you in the standings, you have a chance to basically win the division in a three-game stretch. Minnesota, at Winnipeg, Minnesota at home next Tuesday. So three games in 4 days against Minnesota and Winnipeg. How do you respond? Go up there into Minnesota and handle your business. Play like the best team in the NHL. Play like the team that's in the lead for the President's Trophy, and show us that you can respond to this, which they are totally capable of doing.
Oh, yeah.
They've done it many times.
They've been responding all year.
But now you've got back-to-backs on the road against the two and maybe the second and third best teams in the entire conference.
I mean, they've
you could argue that.
They've responded in game where how many times during this last 6 weeks were they were down a goal, they were down two goals. It looked like they were just taking a period off, and then all of a sudden they flipped the switch. So I think if you take the larger sample size, the entire body of work, that this team responds 9 out of 10 times that they're hit with adversity.
Yeah, I agree, and this is the most important one.
Yeah,
You know, when you're done with this, there'll be 7 games to go or whatever in the regular season, and you'll have either completely stiff-armed the rest of the division, given them the Heisman Trophy and won the division, or you'll be in a 2-point battle with Winnipeg for the division. So this is the division these next 3 games. They just got punched in the mouth. How do you respond? Let's see what they do.
And I think that's fair because, you know, look, you bring up that, is this the blueprint? Is this how you beat them? There very well could be something said for that, but it's one game. And what we have seen, especially since the turn of the calendar 2018, I mean, we have seen this team maybe stumble a couple of times, but it's not consistent. What's been consistent has been the winning and has been the bouncing back from things like this. You know, that Peter Laviolette talked about in his post game, there were some things over this stretch of wins that, you know, he didn't like that maybe caught up with him last night. But I think these are all things that they can easily fix moving forward.
Well, let's also not get carried away from the standpoint of, you know, okay, they found a blueprint, like they all of a sudden, you know, they found a cure for a deadly disease. There's a blueprint to beat Tom Brady, right? I mean,
yeah, it's Michael Strahan and
get a pass rush on him in the Super Bowl and knock him down.
Well, I don't think this is new news. Right. I think the way Tampa Bay attacked Nashville. Winnipeg, you know, that comeback was a great comeback, but Winnipeg punched him in the face. I mean, that was They had two-goal leads in that game because they came out. When you are the aggressor, that is how you can handle the Nashville Predators. You have to be the aggressor.
Okay, so quickly as we lead into Josh Ward, who's going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour. Last night, college basketball Sweet 16 got back underway with March Madness. Loyola, Chicago, obviously they knocked out the Vols, and now they're going to the Elite Eight as they kind of push forward towards San Antonio.
Yeah, and Kentucky loses last night to Kansas State. Just a gritty defensive performance by Bruce Weber's Kansas State Wildcats there. They are the best defensive team in the tournament right now. They're allowing 51 points per game. They gave up 2 transition points to Kentucky last night, completely shut down their up-and-down game. And all those freshmen are done in the Sweet 16. And, oh, by the way, the SEC is done in the Sweet 16. But my question about Loyola Chicago for Tennessee fans, and we'll ask Josh Ward this when we come back, because I was raised a Wisconsin fan and have become and when I went to the University of Tennessee, you know, obviously acquired that as part of my sort of sports love too. But every time I see highlights of Steph Curry and that run that Steph Curry made with Davidson, Wisconsin's upset is a big part of that. And he scored 33 against the Badgers, and Steph Curry was this magical run, Dwayne Wade on this magical run. I think there is something to be said, the initial sting of the loss wears off, right? Like, that sucks. They got beat by Loyola Chicago. It was a bad, it was even a lucky shot that beat Tennessee. It was a great season that ended sort of in disappointment. But I think when, as time goes along, and we'll ask this to Josh, I think there's some weird, I can't get my head around and explain it fully. There's this weird sense of honor to be a part of the Cinderella story. For some reason, I feel like they're like when I see that Steph Curry run to the Elite Eight where they lost to Kansas and he scored 25, but he scored like 100 points in like four games. There's this strange sense of like, oh, my team was a part of that, even though they lost, which is very strange. It's very weird. That's sort of how I feel now with Loyola Chicago.
You like, just want to give Sister Jean a hug. That's what you want to do.
Sure. I want to give everyone a hug. I don't have any problem. I love hugs.
Can I get a hug during the break?
Yeah. I mean, people need more hugs in this country. But the point is, like, I know that the initial sting of the loss is still hurts Tennessee right now. Like, it's going to hurt for a little while. But to me, if they were to make it to the Final Four, it'd be one of the great stories like we have every single, you know, every 3 years or whatever in the tournament. We have one of these double-digit seeds make it to the Final Four. It's a great story. And to be part of that history, I think there's some tiny bit of charm and honor to it. It's just very strange. I've never had that emotion in, like, the NFL when my team loses. I'm like, screw you, Falcons. You know, like, it's never once ever – like, I've never once been like, oh, I was honored to lose to John Elway in the Super Bowl. Like,
yep,
no.
Yep.
But there is some weird thing that happens when you lose to a tiny Cinderella that makes this crazy historic run that you're a part of that history for the rest of time. And that, there's something cool about that. I don't know if everybody else feels that way, or if everyone else is just still just peeved off because they got beat by Loyola Chicago.
Coming up next, Josh Ward, WNML Knoxville. We'll run that by him on the other side. Stay there. It's Morning Drive. That's right. Sister Jean is here. There's nothing to fear. Loyola Chicago on their way to the Elite Eight as they dispatch the Vols and a couple of other teams along the way in another win last night.
More importantly for people in Knoxville, Big Blue Nation is done.
Yes, and so is the SEC in general.
Yeah, also done.
Eight teams and none of them made it to the Elite Eight. Here to talk all of that and more, Josh Ward, WNML in Knoxville. Josh, good morning. What's going on, man?
Yeah, good morning. It does help Tennessee fans with the dilemma they might have felt that they would be in with Loyola Chicago versus Kentucky, because I don't think they like pulling for Kentucky, but there would be the SEC factor. Then there's the yearly question, do you pull for the team that knocked you out, or do you pull against them because you're mad at them? So
Josh,
now you just have Kansas State.
Josh, let's come on, dude. Let's have a talk here. this rooting for the SEC thing, if there's a single Tennessee fan, because I know there's a cross-section of this state that chooses to wear orange in the fall and blue in the spring, and it offends me deeply as an American citizen and sports fan that that happens. If you were to tell me people in Knoxville were rooting for Kentucky, I would disown them.
Well, it doesn't make that much sense to me either. We have the conversation more in football with Alabama and Georgia. This past year going up against each other, we heard so much that Tennessee fans just were pulling for some kind of meteor strike. But it happens more than, honestly, I would think, and I'm guessing you would as well, that the SEC pride comes
so
in, and
stupid.
That's what Tennessee fans pull for very often.
Josh, any surprise that the SEC, which had a really banner regular season, did not get one team to a regional final?
Well, there's a little bit of surprise, especially knowing the roads that it could have been in the South region, which was talked about as the toughest, and I guess turned out to be the toughest region just for different reasons than any of us would have said a week ago. But the roads for Kentucky and Tennessee would have been there. They just didn't make it. But I also thought going into the tournament that looking at the SEC, even with eight teams in the field, that many of them had really difficult roads to try to travel to in even a Sweet 16, but certainly an Elite Eight or a Final Four. You had several SEC teams, I would say more than half, that were not expected to get out of the first weekend, and that is how it played out. So knowing what Kentucky ended up having to go through and knowing what Tennessee would have, today I am surprised. I thought Kentucky would get by Kansas State, and it should have, I would say. So that's disappointing. Still a good year for the league, but I think through a lot of the season we talked about the SEC basketball being better, but it being difficult to find an elite team, and that's how it played out in the tournament.
I think, Josh, something weird happens, and it probably won't happen immediately for Tennessee fans because there's still that initial sting of the loss and the defeat, but I think as time goes on and you see montages of this Loyola Chicago team, especially if they make it to the Final Four, you know, 10, 15 years from now, as I was watching a Steph Curry montage at, you know, at Davidson, what he did, you know, and my family being Wisconsin fans, like, there's some strange, weird sense of honor, I feel like, when and charm when you watch 10 years from now this Loyola Chicago run and Tennessee will be a part of that. I know it doesn't feel that way right now for fans, but am I crazy to think that people eventually get to that where, like in no other sport do I ever feel like if my team is beat, then I'm ever going to be like, oh, that was kind of a cool story there. I think it's only the Cinderella in the tournament that does that, and I think I hope for Tennessee fans that they feel that way eventually too. I just don't know how long it's going to take to get there.
Well, you know, I'm not sure. I think part of it depends on what happens next year. If Tennessee has a really good season next year, then that will help with moving on with the what could have been factor this year. If Tennessee gets to the tournament next year and runs into some kind of buzzsaw and is knocked out early again, then I think they'll look back and say, man, if we had just beaten that Loyola Chicago team, maybe even if this team ends up being a Final Four team. But before last week's game, we were saying repeatedly in Knoxville, you're trying to avoid helping this team become the 2018 Cinderella story. And instead, Tennessee's become a part of it. And it is an incredible story in that it takes a three with a second to go to beat Miami. Otherwise, Loyola doesn't win a game. And there is no Sister Jean conversation. There's no talk about an 11 seed with a chance to go to the Final Four. And then, of course, the shot that Loyola hit against Tennessee there with less than 5 seconds to go, and then a big three when you're up one to clinch the game essentially against Nevada and head on to the Elite Eight. This does really have every element of a Cinderella story. Right now, I don't think Tennessee feels any kind of pride in being a part of it. But if they're able to come back and have success next year, then they'll probably actually look at it and say, well, that helped us, and yeah, we were a part of what was one of the biggest stories of 2018 in college basketball.
I mean, to me, what helps, Josh, is that they've hit three game-winning shots in the last 10 seconds, which is craziness, yeah. And that you basically had the game won, you played perfect defense, and some guy just got a lucky bounce. Like, that's just – I know that sucks, but, like, that's sort of just how the ball rolls sometimes. And, like, there's nothing Tennessee could have done better on that possession on defense. Like, the guy was – he had a hand right in his face. A great player just got a lucky bounce.
Yeah, and that is this tournament. I mean, look at Michigan. It cruises on into the Elite Eight, but it takes a three at the buzzer to beat Houston. Otherwise, there's no opportunity to blow out Texas A&M.
Right.
That's the way this tournament goes. In the first weekend, I thought it was incredible that it was two game winners that moved Loyola Chicago on. And then on the other side of that, that's also a huge part of this tournament. You have the pain that is just immediately apparent from Miami when that three ball goes in. And then Tennessee, after Jordan Bone's shot doesn't go in because the Vols still had a chance there. But that's what this tournament is, and it's really provided everything. But the back and forth of the emotions on one side of the court and the other, Tennessee just happened to be on the bad end of it. I think also Kyle Alexander's injury, do they win with him? We'll never know, but they would have had a better chance. I think some Tennessee fans and Tennessee players, maybe everybody in the basketball facility will say, you know, we kind of just caught a bad break there. Good for Loyola Chicago. They are a tremendous story. As much as Tennessee fans might not be enjoying it right now, I think that they'll look back and say, man, that's an all-timer. It really will be up there
exactly.
With all of the memorable stories and some of the names that are a part of it. Clayton Custer will probably be a name that's remembered as well.
Josh, we're about 6 days removed from Tennessee's basketball season coming to a close. Obviously, the attention now shifts to spring ball and spring practice for the Vols. A little bit with practice, your thoughts overall on some of the position changes, the depth chart, the depth issues as we get ready for spring game.
Yeah, the position changes is one of the biggest stories because guys are moving around from where they played this past fall. Tyler Bird would be one of the most notable. He signed as a defensive back, came in and has played receiver the last 2 years. Now he's back in the defensive backfield, could play corner, could play safety. He was at safety in practice, at least while we were out there for a few minutes on Thursday. And a few other guys have moved around. Carlin Filsamy from running back to defensive back. Princeton Fant, in-state guy there that has been at receiver, tight end, running back. Coaches are trying to get a feel for these players and where they might fit in, and certainly on the other side, players are trying to get a feel for this coaching staff, and then they just have clear depth issues right now. The offensive line would be the most glaring, I would say, with two freshmen that enrolled early, Jerome Carvin from Cordova and then Ollie Lane's local. They're getting a lot of reps because they just don't have many scholarship linemen that are healthy. And then at quarterback, of course, right now they have two guys with two more coming in this summer, Keller Christ and the freshman J.T. Shroud. But at a lot of positions. They've got some depth concerns, and that there's only so much you can do about that right now. But in intensity, tempo, that's what Tennessee's coaching staff is trying to push on the practice field two practices in.
Josh Ward, WNML in Knoxville, every Friday with us at 6:30 here on Morning Drive. We appreciate the time as always. Thanks, man.
Hey, you got it. Thanks, guys.
You got it. Josh Ward with us. When we come back, would it be better for Loyola to just win the entire thing? And we preview tonight's Sweet 16 games. Will we have more upsets with some of the Blue Blood programs? That's coming up next on Morning Drive. Welcome back into Morning Drive on this Friday. We're broadcasting live from the Game Nashville studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. Would it be better for Loyola to just win the whole shebang?
I don't think it's possible. Tonight you're going to have two ones and two twos and a three and a four and a five all playing, so a lot of really good teams tonight. I would be shocked. Michigan, I feel like, is the only team that's capable left on the left side of the bracket that can win the national championship. And if they play the way they played last night, holy cow, good luck. And you've said this before. I've heard you say it. I've been saying it for years now. And I tweeted it out last night. I think John Beilein is the best X's and O's coach in college basketball. It doesn't mean he's the best coach. I just think he's the best X's and O's schematic mind in the game. And I think you could argue that Michigan, from a head football coach, head basketball coach standpoint, might be the best combination of X's and O's running those two programs of anybody in college football. And I got a lot of responses last night on Twitter from Ohio State fans, obviously with Chris Holtmann and Urban Meyer, but Holtmann's still relatively unproven. At the highest level, TCU got some love, which is a little strange. Gary Patterson, Jamie Dixon is a nice combination.
Yeah, it is.
Two very good X's and O's guys. Michigan State, actually, with D'Antonio and Izzo, but they're right now embroiled in some weird stuff. So, I mean, I think if you told me I could have Beilein and Harbaugh, that might be my pick of anybody. Avery Johnson, Nick Saban's pretty good. Avery Johnson has not been to – you know, Michigan's on the verge of a second Final Four under John Beilein.
Three Elite Eights in the last 6 years.
Yeah, dude is always there, and nobody talks about Michigan.
No,
the whole season goes on, and no one's talking about Michigan. And all of a sudden, he doesn't have Marvin Bagley. He doesn't have Lonzo Ball. He doesn't have those kind of guys. But you know, boom! All of a sudden, I mean, Mortiz Wagner is just an absolute beast, and they just destroyed Texas A&M last night. So I think we're in for some really good games tonight. I think we're still going to get – I still think Michigan is going to represent this half of the bracket and give us a really good championship game. I do not want to see Kansas State or Florida State in the national championship game. That just doesn't feel right. Nine seeds. I don't want to live in a world where Bill Snyder and Jimbo Fisher take teams to the Final Four. I don't want to live in that world. But Loyola-Chicago, I think you're right. I'm all for Loyola-Chicago winning the whole stinking thing now. Everyone's going to be rooting for them, and I'm on board with that as well. And again – I don't know how to really explain it because it's so counterintuitive, and Tennessee fans today are not over the loss, nor should they be. But you did everything you could to win the game. You came back. You made the furious comeback. You had a lead. You played good defense in the final possession, and a guy hits a crazy shot. And sometimes that just happens, and I think 10 years from now you'll look back, especially if they win tomorrow and beat Kansas State and get to the Final Four. I think Tennessee fans will eventually fall into this because this only happens – to the Cinderella stories in March in college basketball. It doesn't happen in any other sport where you look back and it's a historic run for a team, and it's really not that big of a deal to be a part of it. There's sort of a little bit of, oh, man, I remember that Loyola-Chicago team. That one, I can't believe they beat us with that crazy jump shot.
If they end up making the Final Four or they end up winning the national title, okay, yeah, you lost to them, but so did four or five other teams along the way.
And it's historic.
Yeah.
Like, it's historic. Again, I don't feel this way about the NHL playoffs. If the Predators were to lose to Winnipeg and it's Winnipeg's second ever series win in history, no charm. Not charming, not honored, none of that stuff. There's just something about the little Cinderella in the NCAA tournament that people gravitate towards. They remember it. It's this thing that happens that people in the country rally. Everyone everywhere in this country is kind of like, yeah, Loyola Chicago. You know what I mean? Like, it's not – everyone's kind of pulling for them. And I know it still stings right now for Tennessee fans because – what if? But you got a great team coming back next year. You got a lot of reasons to be excited about your program for next season with all these guys coming back. And it wasn't a fluke. I mean, they've now hit three game-winning jump shots in the last 10 seconds of three games. But this is unprecedented. This is almost unprecedented.
But you know, I think sometimes there's something you have to differentiate between. There's the buzz and the hype and what people are talking about, and then the actual results, which are ratings. Ratings have always shown that, yeah, okay, people get behind Butler and this team and that team and the charm and the Cinderella, the long shot, and then the ratings say, well, people aren't watching.
Well, and you're right. If they were playing a blue blood in the Elite Eight, if they were playing Kentucky, I think the general consensus television executives would want Kentucky to win, obviously.
Oh, of course.
But they're playing Kansas State. So because your options are Kansas State or Loyola Chicago, everyone's going to go for the Cinderella. I think there's some – now, I will say this about last night's game. Nevada and Loyola Chicago, to me, that represents everything that is good about college basketball. It was great ball movement, tons of passion, great effort, great energy, back and forth, up and down. It is not the elite athleticism of the NBA. It never has been. It never will be. That's just silly to compare. But the reason I love college sports more than I love professional sports is because of what I saw last night in the Nevada-Loyola-Chicago game. When those types of teams get together and they play those – like, look at the A&M game. Those are big power programs. It wasn't even a good game. It wasn't entertaining. We both thought that would be the best game. Not even close to being entertaining at all. Michigan just blew the doors off from the very beginning. It was up by 30 in the first half, and it was boring. It was zero entertainment value. But you sit down and watch. I sat down and watched every second, and I had the Preds on the other TV, but I watched every second of that Loyola Chicago Nevada game, and it was awesome. It was a great basketball game, and it sort of represents everything that college basketball is, different from the NBA, which is not nearly the same level of talent and athleticism and skill, but just overflowing with energy, passion, intensity, effort, defense, hustle, all the stuff you talk about with college sports.
I'm curious to know what matchup would you, if you are getting behind, and let's say you're a Vols fan and you say, you know what, the story of Loyola Chicago is just too good. I'm going to root for him. I'm going to be a good sport. Sister Jean, this, that, the other thing. What matchup would you like to see? Should Loyola make a run? Would you rather see them play a Kansas, a Nova, or a team that a lot of people dislike, Duke?
I mean, right now, I'm just focusing on this half of the bracket. I want Michigan and Loyola Chicago. Yeah. Not even close. Like, again, I want nothing to do with Jameis Winston and Colin Klein playing in the Final Four for Kansas State and Florida State. Those are football programs. I don't want to see those programs. They're great stories. I like Bruce Weber and Leonard Hamilton. They're good coaches. Those are actual basketball coaches, for the record. But Loyola Chicago Michigan is what you want, because what I want is a really high-level team playing in the national championship game, and I also want a Cinderella in the Final Four. So, like, that's, to me, what makes the most sense is Loyola Chicago Michigan. And then on the other side, you're almost guaranteed two really good teams. You know, Clemson and Syracuse aside, you're probably going to get Kansas or Duke, and you're probably, I mean, you've got three of the top, or you've got four of the top five seeds with Villanova, West Virginia, Purdue, and Texas Tech. All three of those teams are high-level teams as far as seeding goes. So you're almost guaranteed two really good teams on the right side of the bracket. I just don't want Florida State or Kansas State playing in the national championship game. That doesn't feel right for college basketball. Loyola Chicago, it's big enough story that it makes sense to me. And Michigan is a legit national title contender, and I don't have any problem with that. It's if Florida State or Kansas State ends up playing in the – and I'm not picking on your teams. It's just those are nine seeds. They're not basketball powerhouses. They're not even that great of teams. I just don't want to see either one of those two teams in the final.
A couple of really good guests coming up on the show today. About an hour from now, 8 a.m., we'll be joined by Eli Gold, the voice of the Alabama Crimson Tide, as we begin our scanning of the SEC spring games. And then also at 9:30 this morning, Predators forward Ryan Hartman will be calling into the show, so we look forward to that. But as we wrap up the first hour, let's go to Chase McCabe with the latest on the stupid poll question of the day.
So I have been working on some audio stuff back here. I just got this posted just a few minutes ago at 1025_MD. So go give us a follow, go vote. And our stupid poll question of the day is there an age cutoff for wearing a hat backwards? And I have thrown a wrinkle in this that you guys don't know about. And that is, your choices are yes, no, or only for Braden Gall.
Interesting, because, yeah.
I'm not sure how I feel about this wrinkle.
Yeah, you know, I think Braden is one of these hat violators at times, and it's kind of.
I don't know if it's really a violation. I'm okay with it.
What do I violate? It's kind of. You have your hat on backwards as you're talking to me right now.
But I'm not in public right now. I'm in the friendly confines of the Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet Studios.
Oh, that's good.
You like that?
Braden?
I am guilty as charged on this one. I'm 35 years old and rarely wear, ironically, I'm wearing a hat forwards right now, but rarely do I wear a hat forwards.
Do you ever not wear it backwards? Do you ever not wear a hat?
Oh yeah, all the time.
I don't think I've seen you without one.
No, all the time.
You did the other day.
Yeah, the only times I wear hats are when I wake up at 4:30 in the morning and don't have time to shower and go to a sporting event. And those are the only places you see me.
Chase, you said I did. Where did I see him without a hat?
At his house.
No, he had his balls.
I had to go get that for the photo op.
Remember, he made us retake the photo because he didn't have the.
Well, it's because I looked like a bum. I looked like a homeless man. I go to dinner with my wife or go to my in-laws. Like, I don't wear a hat everywhere. I mean, it's just I have to get up in the middle of the dark. I can't turn lights on to get ready in the morning, so I'm not taking showers. I shower the night before. And I wear a hat because it's Sports Talk Radio.
Well, there's the poll question for Monday. Do you shower before bed or in the morning?
That's a good one.
I can't function without a shower in the morning. I don't know how you do it. I mean, it's like almost like caffeine.
It's called dark roast. That's how I function in the morning.
615-737-1025.
It's called angry pregnant wife syndrome.
Your wife's pregnant?
I didn't know that.
I'm not waking up a newborn, an 18-month-old and a pregnant wife to take a shower and turn lights on in the morning. I'm getting out of there as quickly and as quietly, like a ninja, as possible out of the bedroom.
Did Toronto show the NHL how to beat the Preds? That's coming up next on Morning Drive.